Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Today, I am doing the second part of the Cliff High interview. And if you haven't heard the first one, you're going to want to do that because that's where we give a lot of background onto how his work, how he goes about doing his work and how it works and why it works. And let me give you a little more background about who he is, in case you haven't seen the first one, and because I didn't give enough background in the first one. Cliff High is a computer scientist and linguistic. He is the founder of the predictive linguistics field. He's pioneered the whole thing, and even though there's a lot more people doing it now, he is the most well-known and respected in that field, and probably because of his famous prediction in June 2001. Listen to what he said about the 9/11 attacks that were going to happen in September, and he said this in June. He said, "A major tipping point that is a life-changing event with aspects of military and accident that will forever change the way we live to occur inside of 90 days." And that started really raising his profile, and people started realizing, hey, there's something here. The consciousness of the people is going to, at minimum, tell you where everybody's thinking and where the emotional level is of the different populations. And even if we don't have psychic abilities, we definitely have the ability to affect what the future is going to be, just as everybody's thinking that way. I actually think that we do have a little bit of psychic something. I mean, you just, in your normal everyday life, you run across things that seem like, wow, you know, how did that happen? But other things that he's predicted as well, he predicted the crash of American 587. He recently predicted Trump's victory when everybody thought he was going to lose. He did that way ahead of time. So there's real stats here showing that things are real. But he'll be the first one to tell you that the predictions don't always come true and they may not be accurate, but they are about 50% of the time that they're showing in the last 20 years, and more so for certain types of things. And I think it's statistically significant enough that it shows you that's an important area of further study and figuring out what's really going on here. But this episode, we are going to dive into the predictions that he has, and it gets, like I said, it's from mundane all the way to crazy and strange, and it awoke my X-Files love, and it was really exciting for me. So I hope it's exciting for you. So let's not waste any more time, and let's get back into the Cliff High interview.
And that there is some, that all of these pyramids are interconnected in a form of a technological device or a planetary-wide device, if you will. And that the pyramids are actually, Antarctica represents the center of not Stone Age man or anything like that, but of a pyramid technology race, if you will, because I'm not sure that we're going to even call them human. And the data sets that we've got now suggest that there's all kinds of what we would think of as space alien components in there. Now, in that mix, we also have all of the fears about the Anunnaki. We have fears about the ownership of the planet. We have all these interrelated connections between the arrival of a thought to be imminent arrival of these space aliens and fear levels that are also all connect back to the Illuminati and the royal houses of the planet who think they're related to these people, these beings that they think are coming back. Now, I don't know that these beings are coming back. I just know that I'm picking up fear about that. So I've got to be real careful to make sure that we understand the distinction here.
Sure.
You know, I'm not reading any data that says that somebody in a telescope saw it. We're getting data sets that suggest that there's a fear developing in the people that are working on all these projects and that they're really being pressed to get the hustle on, to get moving and get it done. And we also get data sets about the interconnection between all of this and what's going on at the deeper levels within the global economy. So there's all these conflicts that are coming out within our data that sound like, and I labeled it thus, sci-fi world. So my December report was entitled Science Fiction World, because it's really is coming down to that. We have data sets that suggest, for instance, that the oil industry that we have now won't exist this way in a few years. And in a few years, oil will simply be too precious to burn, but we won't need it to burn because we'll have what will amount to a basically a perpetual energy source that will come from the interstellar solar flux flow around the sun. So it'll be solar energy, but it won't be photovoltaic at all. And so there's all these really cool things that are being described in the data sets, and most of them, insofar as I can see, seem to originate with or be connected to technological discoveries in Antarctica that we are having within the data sets connected both to that fear and to the temporal sense of urgency. Now, this could all be absolute fantasy, okay? This could be an old man sitting out in the woods getting stuff off the weird forums of fiction writers and all these kinds of people on the internet, except this stuff actually manifests. And so the months that I've been talking about Antarctica, we show so shortly after, this was in like 2013, I think, that we really started in on it. And shortly thereafter, Putin goes to Antarctica. And shortly after that, the head of the Russian church goes to Antarctica, and on and on and on and on, with all these people that we've associated with the Illuminati that and the ruling elites that in fact show up in Antarctica. And then even beyond that, we get some weird one, where right at the height of what has to be described as the most contentious presidential election in modern history, perhaps in the last 80 or 100 years, one of the key figures in that election, the Secretary of State, John Kerry, who's also the titular head of the priesthood that is the Council on Foreign Relations, and he's also the titular head of the 322 Society with all of its weird, satanic undertones and stuff. On that very day of the election, when he's got so much at stake, he flies to Antarctica.
Which is
and
weird.
The excuse is he's going to go look at ice. Exactly. He's going to go look at ice to examine for global warming conditions.
Yeah, right.
It's like, no. That doesn't compute. And exactly. That excuse was so lame as to invite further scrutiny. And then we find out Obama went to Patagonia and probably hopped over to Antarctica. And there's all of these weird connections. And then you start looking at the amount of money invested in Antarctica that is not being reported and the things that are going on there. So, for instance, you find that Antarctica is a no-fly zone. Yet, curiously, if you'll go and look on Google Earth and just creep around the coastline of Antarctica, you find dozens of heliports and landing fields with all kinds of airplanes everywhere. And so it's like, that's curious. And so on and so on and so on. Now, bear in mind, I've been getting strange stuff about Antarctica ever since those first runs in 1997. I had mentioned some of this stuff to somebody on the radio back in 2001, 2, or 3, and then I was gifted. One day it just showed up unbidden. I got a thing in the mail, in the post, and it was a package of 8.5 by 11 glossy photographs that were taken out of Antarctica in a handwritten note. And this fellow informs me that he had been down there on a climbing expedition, a hike, a sanctioned one. They were told you had to stay in this area. They were given these devices, which were new to him at the time, and they were handheld GPS devices, and they were set out. They went out on their little climb, only they strayed off of the area that they should have been in, went through a pass in a mountain range in Antarctica that had, I'll try and describe it this way, but the guy said that he's been hiking and up and down in mountain ranges all along the West Coast, mostly all of his life, and he is a fairly old fellow. And he said everywhere you go, you see marks from one hiker to the next, or even for themselves, showing which way they went, marks in the stone, right? So you can find your way back or come back there and again the next time, or know where to depart and so on. And he said, here they are climbing in supposedly no habitation Antarctica, and as they're going through these passes, there's climbers' marks all over these stones. And he says, you know, not just hundreds, but thousands of climbers' marks. And so that had him really freaked out. They come through this little notch in the hillside, and he says, there we are staring at a pyramid. And he said, not just a pyramid, but he said something that would make the pyramid in Giza look small. And up about a third of the way up it is a door. And he says, this door is arched at the top, and it's got to be at least 90 to 100 meters high and maybe 40 to 50 meters wide. And they were just hiking towards it, had come down out of the pass, were hiking towards it across this plain when they were scooped up by the British forces and summarily hauled off the continent.
Oh, yeah, wow.
But he had photographs that he was able to smuggle out in his boot. And he had those. He was in Europe when he did this, got the photographs developed, made copies and mailed them to me. And I have a little bit more information from him, not very much. And then, you know, on his death, I'm allowed to say who he is and provide details. But at that point, I don't know that it'll be pertinent because maybe all this stuff will come out before then.
Is there any way we can get a copy of one of those? Do we have a copy of that pyramid picture that we could see?
No, that was my deal with him. I wasn't going to show anything until I was informed by his children that he died.
You know what makes me
correct,
mad?
Because he signed the back of it and stuff. Right?
Oh, you know what makes me mad is why do they get to see it, but we can't? Who are they?
That really irritates the crap out of me. I mean, that's why I'm here on this planet is to know stuff, right? And so that really does upset me.
Yeah, because who
especially
the heck
since
are they?
A lot of these people can't think. Exactly. And are they doing a good job in investigating this? Are they making the right decisions on the behalf of humanity for this?
Yeah,
I don't think so. I mean,
yeah,
obviously we're
they?
Not benefiting from it.
Yeah, we're supposed to have these democratic societies and they get to go out and decide for all of us and then keep it secret from us? I mean, who are you to decide for the rest of us? I know that's where I'm at. I'm like, who are you?
That's exactly. And that's what I find so irritating. And if they were even partially coming out with some of the knowledge, I would be somewhat mollified. I'd still might be a little bit grumbly and knowing stuff was hidden. But here we are in a total blackout on all of this. And yet you can go to Google Earth, look down there and see two container ships in a closed hatch cargo boat carrying stuff into a base in Antarctica that should not exist. And
yes,
yet here's something else.
All.
By the way, when you go to Google Earth and you're doing this, you're never allowed to see New Schwabenland. They've blanked that out. So you're not seeing everything. You're seeing stuff that they don't have the time to cover up is basically what it amounts to. Because they won't show you any of the area that the Germans claimed in the 1930s and 40s as their territory in Antarctica. If you go to Google Earth, you're being presented with an overlay image of that area that's just nothing but a big ice block that's taken from the lower quadrant on the photo and then simply replicated. So they're covering something up in there. So now, do the people that are in Antarctica, actually, are they allowed to go over New Schwabenland? Do they know what's going on with the German or the Nazi base there? I don't know.
Yeah. Again, who are they? It's like, come on, this needs to be out for the world to know. Okay, so what is your data telling us is there? Are you getting some indication of what's actually in our...
Yeah, we do. We get some stuff, okay? But it's going to come through kind of weird because what we get is we get an emotional value that is basically like gold on steroids, okay? The emotional value I get for gold has particular... emotional components within our multi-dimensional array. And we get those same values. And so what I've come to call this is precious technology, because it's not precious metals. It's not a treasure per se. And there are many references to gold. There's many references to gemstones and silver and this kind of thing. But those are all in a minimalistic state relative to the technology that is showing up within the data set. So the data sets are suggesting that we will come out and view whatever has been found in Antarctica as precious technology, and we'll hold it in as high esteem collectively as humans as we hold gold in as high esteem. Sort of makes sense?
Well, because we're going to find new way of energy, maybe a way of healing ourselves, maybe amazing.
All different kinds of stuff. Yeah. We get stuff for... we get stuff on all of these various different major areas that we're really lacking in, which is, you know, the economics of the energy and an effective medical system and so on. And actually, it was the medical system that was sort of weird, because that showed up, maybe a year ago, started getting some hints out of the Antarctica sets that we were going to look at some sort of a major rethink. And so actually a lot of the stuff that we see showing up is going to be about how we're all going to have to internalize and re-understand and grapple with who we are as humans and the greater sense of what humanity is and where it is now and where it's come from. So there's a lot of that. So now there's also a lot of the fear sets are going to that. So you can see that there are indeed a lot of individuals that represent the height of the power pyramid at the moment that are very much afraid of what's going to happen to their power pyramid when this knowledge comes out. Regardless of how we deal with that knowledge later on, there's a lot of people that are just afraid of the knowledge itself.
Well,
that's why they've been strained here.
Well, I think it's about time, and we have all this other data showing that there's more to our history. And so it's just a matter of let's learn what it really is. And if there's information about our history, I mean, there's so many people that it's so obvious that there's more to it. Why are you keeping it secret? What's it's time to knock it off. Santa Claus doesn't exist anymore and we're growing up. So let's figure it out.
Yeah, but see, there's a broader motivation there. And that broader motivation is the intense self-interest of the people at the top, because they don't want this knowledge to come out because they're instantly disenfranchised. It's Bitcoin for the mind, if you will, right? So all the bankers in our minds are thrown out because we're suddenly super empowered by the information that comes out of this level of discovery. And it's really fitting. I mean, it's temporally ironic that it's going to occur in the age of Aquarius, the knowledge bearer and all of this kind of thing, and at the very beginning of that age of Aquarius. So for the next 72 years, and we actually show in, because I was able to identify in the early days of my work, multi-generational impacts as the result of the language, I've got a value in there and it shows up occasionally. And we're going to have some multi-generational impacts that will go on out at least five generations. In my data sets, that's 21 years. So we're looking at a little over 105 years. It'll take us, insofar as the data is forecasting, just to integrate the knowledge that's going to be coming out of this discovery. And that's just, you know, the age of Aquarius, of course, starts off with these first 72 years as we start shifting into it. And that was like as of, I think, last year.
Well, you know, I had just had a guest on too. This was last week that talked about the information age. When we went from farming, agricultural, to the industrial age, it took about 150 years for us to actually change as a society into that new age. And it's going to take 150 years for us to go from the industrial age, which is what we're in right now, just to fully integrate the informational age and what we're going through now. So maybe that's part of what you're seeing as well.
I would say that we don't have that time. I doubt seriously that we've got as a species, that we've got that time. Unless we start making some really appropriate decisions now, we wouldn't make 150 years because we've got we're dependent on agriculture. Our agriculture is under stress. It's failing us now because we've been in denial about the true state of our climate. We're actually going into an ice age in 2015, and was the very first one of significance, but 2016 was the second and basically undeniable winter here in which we lost food crops to the extent that we had to shuffle and redistribute food around the planet. And even so, it had major impacts on the northern states in Europe in terms of the amount of money that everybody had to lay out for food. This is just the beginning. This is not a freak. This is simply the beginning of a long-term trend, and people will ignore it to their peril. So next year, you can anticipate anybody north of latitude 30 will have a certain risk of paying 5 or 10 times what they need to, or have in the past, for fresh vegetables, because we will have another crop failure on the order of what occurred in this winter in southern Europe. It may strike in the North America next year, or it may strike in Europe again. There's just no way of knowing. It may hit Asia, but we will experience it. And it's just going to be ongoing year after year after year. The real beginning of the ice age can be technically thought of as 2024 with a the walls of ice kind of thing, not really getting moving until 2030, but we're into it now. And so we've got those number of years to prepare for this. And it's kind of like we need to face it. We need to look at it, get real about it, or we're not going to make it.
Okay. And so what will the ice age do? Because they're talking about global warming, which you're saying, no, that's not what the data is saying. The data is saying we're going to hit an ice age. What would an ice age do to our planet?
Well, it's doing it already. First effect we'll notice is that your food prices are going to go up, and then you'll notice that their food availability is going to go down. You'll have real trouble sometimes getting particular kinds of food. And then over the course of years, that real trouble getting certain kinds of food will eventually get into a state of real trouble getting any food unless you make preparations for it. And this will be true at an individual level, but it'll also be true at a collective level. It need not be this way. The solutions are there for us. They're easily implemented. What's going to kill us is if we try and maintain our giant base of operations for our food supply for the planet. As long as we try and maintain giant farms, as long as we try and maintain huge outlays for giant machinery to do harvests, as long as we try and maintain the giant collectives to process the food, we are doomed. we won't be able to sustain that over the long term. In the Maunder minimum, which was 400, okay, yes, our data shows an ice age. Yes, the data has shown an ice age from 1997 when I first started putting in the, started getting results out of the internet. But I started checking on whether or not we could even realistically get into an ice age when all these people started freaking out about global warming and started running around with what I discerned as the warmest talking points. And at that point, I discovered that no, we can't go into global warming. It's never happened in all of Earth's history. We're facing the, we're right now, we're in a maximum solar cycle sunspot, and yet we have no sunspots. We're about to go into the solar minimum, which is the 11 years from 2022 onward, and we'll be into a minimum that will be lower than any of the other minimums, probably back to the Maunder minimum. And that was 420 years ago. The Maunder minimum was a period of time of great cold where people could skate, ice skate on all the canals in Europe and all the rivers in Europe. It was that cold every winter. The Germans had to shift from wheat and seed production to under the ground crops just to be able to get enough food to survive. There was migrations of huge levels of people throughout Siberia and Mongolia down into the warmer realm. And this was just a bare minimum. This was not a real ice age per se. And that 420-year cycle is part of a cycle that we're going through now. We're going to go through the same effect, the same things that caused the Maunder minimum are going to cause our ice age at the moment, and that is the movement of Jupiter and Saturn relative to each other is called causing the orbit of the Earth to bulge out slightly, because these two planets, which are usually opposite mm-hmm. each other, are ever so slightly closer together, and so they're pulling us out of our cycle and adding hundreds of thousands of miles to our orbit, which is going to take us away from the sun, just as the sun, we have no way of knowing what is causing it, is actually weakening. So our sun is losing its temperature from 5,000 degrees Kelvin, heading down to about 3,000 degrees Kelvin.
Ooh, so that's a lot.
Well, but for us, it'll be about a 60% reduction in overall solar energy. But for the kind of energy that we get to grow plants, it's really only going to come out to about a reduction of about one eighth of the energy between now and 2030. So over that period, though, that one eighth of an energy reduction in energy is going to really impact crops, especially at those areas of the planet in the northern latitudes where that energy doesn't come in at a whole lot of strength anyway. So now you might be able to grow crops at, say, 50 degrees of latitude. Maybe you can grow buckwheat or some some hardy plants to get seeds out of. And that's going to change. Maybe we won't be able to grow buckwheat even north of, say, 35 degrees here in a few years just because of the temperature. And wheat will probably be a tropical crop and not able to be grown outside of the tropics at all, so probably not north of 30. And corn will maybe only be able to be grown in a very narrow band in Central America and someplace in Africa, and that's about it, around the equator, simply because there won't be enough light and the conditions for it. So our corn-based culture is going away. So that's going to significantly impact how well we do, how many people are eating, and how well they're eating. Now, it need not be this way that we make ourselves dependent on these large moves, and we can take action on our own, and deal with it, but it is something you've got to face effectively. And if you're in sort of in denial by listening to the people that are screaming warming, warming, warming when they're absolutely wrong and they never present any science and they lie about the data that they present, well, you're going to make inappropriate decisions. Now, why they want to do that is anybody's guess. I don't go into that. I just note that it's occurring and that, oh, by the way, they're wrong.
Well, does your data say that we're going to come back out of the ice age at any point, or it just says we're going to go in?
My data doesn't look that far ahead. See, so the effective range I've got is on our long-term data that I determined way back in 97 was between 19 months and about, say, 36 to 38 months. So about twice the full range of that, I get some hints. And it's quite accurate to say that as we mess about in the data here, the further out you get, the fewer clues you get as to what's going on. And so within the longer term data, you get to a point where any interpretation simply is just too unreliable because there's just too few words. So no, I don't have an answer to that.
So are we seeing more ice in Antarctica and the North Pole, or are we seeing melting?
No, there's no melting whatsoever in the North Pole. And in fact, the Russians have got two of their best icebreakers trapped at the moment and won't be able to get them free until we move well into March, and that's been trapped for a number of months. And in fact, the ice levels, in spite of what it's saying here in the Western republics, the USA population and stuff, in spite of all the media you're hearing, there's been no melting of ice in Antarctica, in in the Arctic that is in any way significant. And in fact, we now have more ice in the Arctic than we had in the 1930s and 40s, which was a very warm period of time for the globe. So we've got proportionally more ice than we had back then. Antarctica has got less ice on one side, but more ice on another side. And the way in which it's developing, the ice on that's developing in Antarctica is coming in as floating ice, and it seems to be going off on this one side of Antarctica, and as though it's going to basically creep away from the continent, and it's as though the forces that are making it cold are pulling the ice mass off of the continent per se. That's why I think you have a lot of the pressure temporally showing up now, and why all these people are at the elite are trotting on down to Antarctica, probably because so much of the stuff is becoming exposed just by the melting ice. They realize that they're going to have to deal with some level of disclosure about it, and they're probably really have their knickers in a twist about what they're going to say and to whom.
Oh, I'm so excited. I can't even contain myself. I want to fly down there tomorrow.
Everybody is like that. I just want to get in a plane. Actually, I want one of those little floaty triangular spaceship things that they build in Area 51, just so I can zip down and you know, spend the day and then come back for dinner.
Exactly. I want to know what's down there. And if the ice is melting on one side and showing us these amazing things. Now, that picture of that pyramid that you saw, does it look like the Giza? Because in the Giza pyramid, they stripped off all the granite, right? This one wouldn't have the granite stripped off, I would assume.
It's got ice on it, see? So you can see that there's a layer of ice that's still hanging onto it. The door was a dark feature. You can see it's quite large. You can see the arc over the top of the door is clearly delineated by the stone or whatever that protrudes out, but there's still a lot of ice on it. But the you can tell that it's a pyramid. It has four sides. It's not a tetrahedron. So four sides plus the bottom. You can also tell that there were probably what looked to be maybe steps or big platforms that would allow you to walk up to that door or at least deal with it. But it's out. It's probably up, I don't know, with the ice not being there, maybe that door is up a third into the height of the pyramid. So maybe it might be 200, 300 feet up. This is a big thing. When I look at this, you see mountains in the background in this photo, and the picture of the pyramid looks like maybe the size of St. Helens before it blew itself up. Wow. I mean, good size.
Well, the amazing part of it is if you get that ice off of it and stuff, and it's intact, the granite wasn't stripped off and everything, it's probably absolutely beautiful too. I mean, it's just this amazing structure.
Yeah, but you know, we don't know what these things are for. They're a technology. There's a lot of people that suggest that it's some form of electrical generation kind of a device, a la the sort of thing that Tesla had done with his Wycliffe Towers. And so the idea is, at least from the thinking of these individuals that have speculated at this range, is that what you would do with these pyramids is that you would basically pulse electrical energy up into the ionosphere, and in doing it in such a way, you would create a conduit for that energy to come back down in flow in the form of electricity created out of the ionosphere down onto the pyramids. And so the idea might be that, you know, you're in near the local pyramid in your town and your cell phone's running out, you just go and set it up near the pyramid and let it recharge, that sort of thing. Or, you know, you stick a device into the ground wherever you are and suck the electricity out that the pyramid is pumping into it. So, and there's so many pyramids around the planet. The estimation is that we're talking tens of thousands, and perhaps the oldest one is in Java. Perhaps there's some debate about this because there have been recent discoveries of pyramids in the Polynesian islands, some of which may be the islands. it's that weird.
Wow.
The people are maybe living on dirt, basically, that just accumulated around the top of really giant pyramid. And so whatever that technology was, it's not operating now, but we get hints in the data sets that whatever they found in Antarctica does explain this, and at least as we say within the data sets, shows up as precious technology. Now, we do have this stuff coming out, okay, in terms of the data sets. There's suggestions, there are hints that this is going to be used strategically, that some people know disclosure has to happen, not necessarily about space aliens or that stuff, but specifically about Antarctica, that they've got to disclose some of this stuff, and that some people in the let's say the power structures of the planet are content enough with how things are going that they anticipate releasing this information over this say next few years. So there is that. We do have some hints that they're going to share. Now, some of the hints that we get from this show really interesting things, and you'll appreciate this from the money side of things. And that is that there's some hints in the data as back as far as 6 or 8 months ago that there was going to be what we could call an Antarctica precious technology gold rush, okay, where corporations instead of people, so it would be like 1845, like the California gold rush, mm-hmm. only instead of thousands of people showing up, it'll be thousands of corporations that want to get in on it all. And so that is actually showing as being a good thing for the collective global economy, even though the USA pop and the central banks and all of this are going to cause problems for the next 4 or 5 years. We have this other building trend that will pull us out. So in our data sets, we don't have anything like a third world war necessary to get us out of our current economic
malaise. Oh, that's phenomenal. That's great.
Yeah, exactly. I was very pleased about that because I'm really paranoid about these idiots doing the stupid things, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, I don't trust them. I don't. They're stupid. They're dumb. They're also misguided, and they have the wrong motivations. And they're, you know, some of them are absolute evil. They may not think of themselves that way, but you know.
Well, if war is your solution, then you're not that great of a person.
Well,
let's face it.
You're not thinking that well. At a very minimum, you don't think well and should not be put in charge of basically anything. You should be put back with the kids, you know, let an adult come on in and supervise.
But exactly.
So our data doesn't show that. Now, what our data shows, and I wrote about it in this last report, because it's shown, okay, up until this past year, now, I've been doing this since 1997. I've had public reports out there more or less since the year 2001. In all that time, I've never bothered to screw around with trying to forecast any of the things related to politics or presidential elections or anything, because there was no nuance involved. And it all was, you know, pretty much insofar as the data sets, it was just all these people are being deluded into going and voting to pick people that have already been chosen anyway. This time it was different. This election was quite odd. And so this year I commented on it ahead of the election itself, because all of the political stuff had really slid over and become the generalized discussions within USA pop. And so I started getting involved in the politics end of it in a way that I have never ever before, because I knew something was up, because we were dealing with a context change here. Context change is where the nature of the language itself shifts as we're going along. So like from immediacy language into more economic activity on the net, or, you know, shorter term language into immediacy language dominating, that sort of thing. And so the language is shifting and I had to react to it. And so I started making some, you know, letting out some of the language I was getting about the elections and stuff. Now, what I found really intriguing is that I've been able to pick up some hints that it will occur to someone within the administration, or has already, I believe, because that's how I pick it up. I think I actually get this information after these decisions have been made and universe decides that this is a real probability of something occurring. And so we start picking up hints of it. Some of the things we're getting hints of is the idea of a third force. And so I phrased it as strategy 3 in this last report. And so it's my supposition and what the data seems to be suggesting is that sometime, maybe in the midst of our chaos that's going to appear economically over midsummer through fall, sometime in there, it will occur to somebody to release the information about Antarctica as a way of derailing the opposition at that time, as a way of yanking the rug out from underneath their feet and totally changing the nature of the game, if you will, up-leveling the whole game into an entirely different game. So it's as though you're doing Pokemon and all of a sudden you up-level and you find yourself in, space alien or hunt for space alien progenitors, you know, that kind of a thing.
And they're going to do
an entirely different game.
And they're going to do this because they're just going to say, okay, I'm done with this, and let's just change the whole conversation and get it out there, because they don't want to have to deal with whatever the other faction is throwing at them.
Sort of. Okay. And see, we sort of get that. So you're sort of intuitively correct about how these things arise for us. What we get is the emotions first. Okay. Because that's how it all works, is through this emotional reduction engine I've got. So I get these quantifiers for the emotion, and then I start tracking down the language and hunting out the language that's actually appearing. So I do get that sense. I get the sense, but rather I see it from a slightly different viewpoint. And that is, I get the sense that they're faced with real problems that they actually have to deal with. And on top of that, they've got these buttheads that are trying to bog them down and derail them and prevent them from succeeding. And the idea at that point is that, oh, well, look, all the buttheads would go away and all their power would be removed if half of all their people suddenly discovered that everything they'd been told was a lie, and that all this new information is factual, and that their entire operating premise for their viewpoint of themselves as humans and all of this stuff on the planet is so profoundly different that all these people are simply going to have to think about this for months, and they'll never ever be able to go back to what they were doing in the past just because it's such a shock. So this would be like the equivalent, I don't know if there's ever been anything in history showing up as what we've got in the data sets relative to the impact at a knowledge level. That's why I keep coming back to the irony of here we are in the age of Aquarius, and everything we've been told is true is going to be upended, and we're going to have to sort through and figure out what really happened. But we know that none of the stuff we've been told was even remotely close to actually how it worked out, or is even remotely close to the reality that we're in. And so the idea is going to show up that the power base, the people causing the problems to the administration later on, when other issues arise, it will just be more expedient to do it then. That's just kind of what we're getting in the way of the data, that it's like, okay, let's just do it now and get it done with. And it'll cause them all kinds of problems. Yes, we'll have to suffer, but it'll at least get these bastards off our back.
What? How do you think people are going to respond? Because it takes a long time to absorb it and then reset your whole paradigms. You know, I would think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to reject it. It'll be a hardcore cognitive dissonance, and it'll be...
Oh, it'll be thought about, it'll debated over. That's why we have 105 years it's going to take us to integrate this.
Religions
are going to go through mass transformation. Some of them won't exist. Some new ones will come into existence as a result of that. People are going to go crazy. I'm sure lots of people will freak out so much that they kill themselves over this kind of stuff. But, you know, we've got to basically grow up and face reality, or our species is going to perish.
Well, at some point, we need to know that Santa Claus isn't real and know what reality is and move on. Because if you don't face reality, it doesn't make sense.
Right. Here's another part of that. Reality is a whole lot more amazing than Santa Claus. I'm just blown away about the absolute staggering amount of stuff that's coming out. So we get all kinds of weird stuff within the data sets, and have about, especially about Antarctica, in 2003 or 4, sometime in there, started getting hints about a new form of power. And it'd be like an electricity that where it wouldn't, you wouldn't have to bother putting wires into your wall or anything. You'll just decide that, oh, okay, the electricity, I want it to come over here. And you'll just tell the device that this is where you get it from, and in some way connect that device to that particular spot on the wall and let them work it out. So, you know, so the device will get its power and you won't have to be involved in that. So we're talking some really strange changes here about how things are. Plus the data sets.
I can see how you could do that, though, with the zero point energy. There's this show I did on zero point energy batteries, and they came up with, well, they didn't come up with, they've learned about it. University of Colorado has a patent on it, and they're working on zero point energy batteries. Well, and then you combine that with computer. I mean, I could see how we're almost to that point now with being able to do what you're talking about.
Well, also, by the way, Colorado was probably, I don't want to take anything away from any of the people that actually did the engineering, but I bet you that there were key concepts they were gifted with, and that maybe those concepts are indeed coming out of some of the things that they're finding in Antarctica now.
Maybe.
I mean, all of our, you know, we know, for instance, that we were on a particular path as a species, and that involved heavy investment in vacuum tubes, and all of that changed in 1947. Why? Well, shortly before the change, we had a spaceship crash, and that's when we learned about fiber optics, digital technology, and solid-state semiconductors, and we abandoned vacuum tubes as being too expensive, and the solid-state semiconductors were easily produced, and so on. And so our whole technological basis for our society changed in 1947 as a result of that. I wonder how much of the technological basis for our society in 2017 will be so radically changed that a few years from now we'll be able to say, aha, they were leaking this stuff out from Antarctica even then.
Well, we think of what, you know, I've had people on about nanotechnology and the concepts and what we can actually do with that. I'm telling you, we're on the verge of explosive new technology, and it's just amazing. That's why I'm very excited to hear what's going on in Antarctica, because we could maybe take huge leaps forward. But also, even more so is understanding our history. You know, what the heck? What really is our history? What else are you learning about that? I know I want to get back into a little bit about the gold and silver and things just so people can hear about that. But what are you, else are you learning about Antarctica?
So we have some hints, all right, because we're not close enough to enough of these events that they're falling into the short, into the immediacy data. And so we're dealing with short-term data, which is usually effective from the beginning of the fourth week away from when we talk about it out to maybe the end of the fourth month. So, you know, we're maybe say, and then the error range is that same 4 months out. So we're looking at maybe something 8 or 9 months away. And so we don't get a lot of details, but we do get some hints of really strange stuff. So, and it's odd the way we get the hints, because we have hints of a new form of a, let's call it a healing modality. And it'll be new to us, although it'll be based on frequencies. And so it'll be based on sound and light frequencies, the way things like that we've had in the past, you know, Rife technology and these kinds of things, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but the data sets are showing this as being a big screw up. We have data sets saying that the people down there in Antarctica found a hospital, or what they think is a clinic, I guess. And so they go on into this area. We don't know if it's in a pyramid or if it's under the ice or in an underground facility or whatever, but we just get some data sets saying, you know, discovery of a clinic, medical clinic. And so they just get more and more data. And so it appears that they discovered this, what they think of as a clinic, go on into it, and they discover a database. And so they make the assumption they're looking at patient records, because there's like 300,000 or 400,000 of these records that they've discovered in this digital form that they're apparently able to activate. Okay. This is the hints that are coming out. Now, it could be all spurious, because, you know, this could be the half that isn't going to manifest. But nonetheless, this is there's a fair amount of detail here, so we have a little bit of confidence in it. And so it goes on to suggest, as the fuzzy sets build up, that it's going to take them a while to discover that they screwed up, and it's not patient records. It's, in fact, a library of frequencies for healing things. And it may be millions of them, because the 300,000 or 400,000 of them are each subdivided. And so the idea is that there's a frequency in there that will shine lights or do some kind of a device that will go across your body to make you not bald, or kill toenail fungus, or grow new teeth, or, you know, basically everything short of surgery. And so that's what's going to be described, but it'll take us years to get at that. And what's interesting for us, though, is the data sets are suggesting that in this year, in 2017, somebody's going to get the idea that, oh, hey, maybe this is not the individual records of patients, but maybe this is in fact a modality that you play through that big stone thing over there in the corner. and it'll all sort of happen that way. So the curious part for me, the fun part of this was that, oh, look, humans have found this, but we're so silly, we don't know what we're looking at.
That is just absolutely incredible, though. I mean, that's that's with so much fun for you to just be looking at this stuff going, oh my God, you could be feeding science fiction writers for centuries.
Sure. Or and in fact, I've gotten some homages from some kudos, if you will, buried in some popular movies that were told specifically to me was by individuals out of the entertainment complex. Oh, look, so-and-so is a writer on this, and he put in this little thing here because he reads your material, and this is just a way of, you know, an Easter egg is the term in computing circles, right? And mm-hmm. So it was an Easter egg in the movie. So in Men in Black 3, some of the stuff, a lot of the stuff about time and so on was taken from some of my work, and they put the homage in there of the scene in the pie store. Because I'm a well-known pie aficionado.
Oh, that's just so awesome.
So that was kind of cool. I enjoyed hearing that story, yeah. And I could indeed feed the science fiction writers, but I don't read fiction anymore, and this is so much richer and so much
God.
More fascinating.
That's what I mean. That you yours is so much, has so much meat to it. Okay, so now can they get, you have these reports, right, that are $15. I went on your website. Now, is this all in there? So if they went in there, they'd hear what you're talking about now, plus a whole bunch more?
Oh, yeah. The last reports have been very voluminous because ever since about June of last year, it's as though the some change occurred within humanity, and I've been getting a lot more release language. And so the release language is just causing all kinds of things to pour out. So we've gotten 30 and 35 pages of predictive linguistics in each and every report. Now, the reports all come with a 5-page primer at the end in which I define the terms that are used in that report so that you know what we're talking about and how we got some of this information. So not all of the 45 pages are actually forecasts, but of those pages in some of the reports, we're at about 30 to 35 pages of forecasts. So there's tons of stuff in there. You know, everything about, like, I think it was June of last year, April of last year, and December of the year before, we had stuff about the Oroville Dam that's coming unglued at the moment. And so, you know, we had that stuff out there months ahead of time because it was in the longer and shorter term data sets. And so recently, we've had some data sets about, well, I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff. The economics, the Pizzagate, all of this sort of thing is anything that we that shows up to a certain level of economic or of emotional thresholds, I'll examine. Now, I don't put in a lot of stuff because much of it is repetitious from one report to the next. And I just really want to concentrate on what's new.
I just think it's absolutely fascinating. I know we got to get into the economy real quick, but it's funny that the stuff that you have is so amazing that the whole economy crashing to me is secondary.
it's a minor blip. Exactly. For me, it's like, oh, yeah, yeah, we'll get through that. Yeah, yeah, big deal, you know.
I want to know about human history. Exactly. Who cares about the whole economy and the world crashing? Okay, so what's going to happen to our economy and what's going to happen with gold and silver and are we doomed?
No. We're not doomed at all. We have five really rough years here in the USA to go through as the currencies die around us and are replaced by new medium of exchange.
And bear in mind, it's a good thing, right?
It's a good thing. We, I mean, because we're supporting, like, all the bad guys. Yeah,
we're sick right now. I mean, we have so much debt. We need to get cleaned. It's like going through a bankruptcy, cleaning yourself up, and getting healthy and moving on.
Correct. Or it's like being riddled with parasites. You take the medicine. Yes. You're going to have very nasty a period of expelling them, and you're clean thereafter. You feel better, and then you go on. And that's what we have to go through. And it's going to be really harsh on a lot of people that can't place themselves in a historical context for this, and it'll be extremely difficult. But with some foreknowledge, we can get through it in a lot better than we would if it just blindsides us. And so that's what I've been trying for years to do, is to get enough foreknowledge out there that the people around me don't go absolutely crazy when this stuff happens, which it's going to anyway. So our currency crises, there's really only one currency in crises at the moment, but it is the global currency. So all other currencies are suffering from it. And so as the US dollar dies over these next 5 years, the USA population has a really harsh time of it. The death will be visible to even the most unaware individuals as we get into September, October of this year. But the real bleed out will start in late July. And that's when I think that some of the decisions will be made to try and provide us a collective vision to get through the depression, other than everybody standing around singing Kumbaya.
Yeah, because that doesn't work. I mean,
that doesn't work. No.
It might make you feel better, but we got to do stuff. We got to get through it. And
what will get us through this is the emotional motivation that says, look, I can see the giant gleaming, shining city on the hill. It's, even though I'm tired, it's just a matter of me getting and walking up to it, right? So one foot in front of the other. And we just need that kind of an attitude and something to strive for to get us out of this. And I think, to be honest, that the amount of energy and trillions of dollars that have disappeared need to come back to us one
Absolutely.
Way or another. But see, this is harsh, though, okay? This is where we get really harsh. And we have to face up, in no offense to your gender, but I say we've got to stand up and man up, because here's what's going to happen. We know that there's millions of people in our society, in our social order, 350 million people in the USA population. We know that there's millions of these guys that are working in holes in the ground, figuratively, on reverse engineered space alien technology and stuff. We also know that the organization that allows that to continue and supports the secrecy has done terrible things for 60 years, and other millions of us have suffered as a result of that secrecy. And those of us that have suffered from it have got to come to terms with it, not be whiny about it. And we have to understand we've been trashed and victimized. We will not be made whole from this. The thing we can do is to try and recover our lives and build out from here on some of the stuff that has been hidden from us, but basically acknowledge that we can't demand retribution if we're going to have this society survive. So we can't spend the next 100 years trying to punish the bad guys that have been hiding this stuff from us for 80 years and killing anybody that got too close to the stuff and spilling the beans. And all these poor people that got too close and died, who many of whom, are my brothers in that regard, right? It would be me in other circumstances. And we have to accept that bad things were done, and there is no recompense for that. We can't make these individuals whole. The best thing we can do is to live well as our revenge against the bad guys, if you will, but also cut some slack and allow the bad guys to live more or less unmolested, but now as our slaves instead of our masters.
Well, we cannot let criminals be running our country anymore. As this thing goes, we need to actually have law and order. You can't just rape and pillage our community anymore. And if you're going to be that type of person, you're out of here. And if you're doing criminal activity, you're out of here and put away. I mean, we have to be smarter, and we have to have integrity, and we have to have morals.
Correct. Yes. And we have to demonstrate those, and the society has to be prepared to have the political will to enforce that. And a lot of time it's ugly. Now, in some of these cases, like my point going to this, though, is we face such real serious problems for the species as a whole over these next 100+ years that it would be a shame for us to be diverted into a truth and reconciliation effort at a whole social order, when really what we need to do is to put that aside, let some individuals that are really concerned with it work on it, while the rest of us get back to building what's going to be necessary to get us to survive. We're going to have to move our agriculture into other forms of energy. You know, that's got to be electrically powered. We've got to have auxiliary energy for it. We've got to get it under some form of protection from the elements. We've got to decide where it'll be safe to grow. Maybe we're going to have to grow vast quantities of food floating in the ocean, simply because that's the most easily accessible area for solar radiation and flat free land, if you will. So we have a lot of big decisions that we have to make, all of which we can implement once we get into this issue. And I'm not saying get over it, but I'm saying let's get into
it. Sure. Let's solve our problem. I mean, we're going to have to put our heads together and solve our problems and get the bad guys out of the way so they can't bog us down.
No, I'm sorry. That's the problem. We can't get the bad guys out of the way. We have to have them at the table because we need to know what they know.
Oh, yes. But I'm talking about the people who are trying to keep us from moving forward.
And so am I. That's the real horror here, is that everybody that I... excuse me, everybody that I detest, everybody in the power pyramid that is non-human in that regard, has an anti-human agenda. We still need them because they have a historical knowledge of how this stuff works, how it came about. We'll need them for a number of years, and we need to go on in, and we need to drive a bargain. And so here's the thing.
But they're not all bad guys, are they? Are they all bad guys?
No, there's a lot of people that have been co-opted, a lot of people that were forced into the circumstances. But I'll tell you something that's factual, okay? A very personal, private family kind of a situation. My father was way up in the military, okay? He was got a battlefield commission in the Korean War for heroism. By the time he had reached, by the time we'd come to 1968, he had gone through enough levels of service as an officer in the military that he was a liaison aide, to the president, Lyndon Johnson at the time. My dad was also in the chain of command that dealt with the Democratic convention protests there and saw the strife and everything. So here's the thing. When my father got close enough to the power centers to see how evil it was, even after having gone through 2 tours in Vietnam, Korea, all of these kind of things, as a hardened officer, and he led he taught people combat techniques, so, you know, jumping out of airplanes, all of this kind of stuff. I mean, you know, a ranger kind of material, right? And after all of that, when he got that close to the power centers in Washington, D.C., at the culmination of a career heading towards general, in one afternoon, he pitched it all away and volunteered to go back to Vietnam to get away from it all because of what he saw there. So, wow. And he would not discuss that with us. And they were so irritated with him that they sent him back to be the head of what they sure was a suicide mission, which was to be the head of the military governor of Pleiku right before the 1968 Tet Offensive, which was the most horrific battle period we'd ever seen in Vietnam. And so the situation was such that, you know, he ran into the dark secret world at that level. he'd run into it before, thought he knew it, and then he got up to the point where he was probably, you know, face to face with people dealing with space aliens and that level of stuff, and decided that he could not go along with their approach on it. So that kind of stuff is what we have to deal with. We've got to harden ourselves up. And we've got to say that we have to accept what we see in front of us. And if we can't deal with these individuals, okay, you know, take them out, hang them, string them up, whatever we have to do, get them out of the picture. But we recognize that in doing so, we throw away a resource that we might need later. And it may be that they're just too unpalatable to deal with. They're too much of a pedophile. They're too much of a sociopath or a psychopath. They've got too much blood on their hands. And so we have to shed them out of our social order. But we must recognize that we are throwing away a resource, because we're at that stage now where all that knowledge will be really incredibly useful.
Oh, this is just fascinating stuff. It'll be really, I'm glad I'm alive now, because I'm just excited to, I know it's not going to be an exciting time over the next 6 years, but long term, this is just an amazing situation.
It's challenging. And no, it's exciting because it is a challenge, because there is the potential for failure. This is when you know you're most alive, is when you're on the mat and you're not sure if you're going to be able to throw that guy or be thrown.
Well, it's just the fact that we can figure out what really who we are and what's really going on. And if there can be a worldwide cleansing where we're not just killing people and doing wars, that would be a phenomenal thing, too. I don't know what your data is saying about that, but the fact that it's saying there isn't any going to be wars in our near future, I think, is very positive.
Well, it's showing that we don't have, like, World War III.
That's what I mean.
Right. Still going to be conflict. We still have all kinds of people that are suffering terribly, whose response to that suffering is violence. And we have to deal with that as we go forward. And it'll take us a long time, part of this 105 years, as we integrate all of this. But a lot of it will go away as a lot of the knowledge comes on out.
Well, that's fantastic. I got to have you back. I'm running out of time, but sure, I got to have you back. This is phenomenal. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate it. And I will send you a link, and hopefully you will share with your social media and we'll go from there. But I'm going to have also your information so they can buy your reports. Now, how many reports do you have out? Is there one from the beginning of the year, or what do you do?
No, How does it work? One a month.
And
so there's many years worth of this stuff going back, because bear in mind, each and every report will look at some of the long-term data, some of the short-term, and some of the immediacy. So we're looking at long-term stuff now that we'll probably still be discussing in the reports 2 and 3 years from now, and just intermittently, not continuously, but, you know, might see it 2 or 3 months from now, and then a few months after that, that sort of thing, because it'll take a while to mature.
Okay, now if I bought the January, and how many do you have? You have January and February right now out for 2017?
We also have a special Bitcoin and gold and silver report that was done in mid-January that already some of that stuff's happening.
I was somewhat
famous for my predictions on Bitcoin because I've been so accurate. We're heading to 1448 as our next big stop.
How about silver and gold?
Well, we still have that prediction for $600 an ounce silver. We should see something close to that in terms of price sometime this year. But bear in mind, it'll be because of the crisis of the dollar, not because the value of silver goes up. But the real truly amazing thing is that our data sets continue to point towards silver and gold reaching parity. So the price for gold will be the price for silver, because silver will be so precious to us in this new technology.
So if you've been buying silver, that's been a smart move.
It's going to turn out to be such a thing of genius that, you know, your descendants for generations will sing your praises.
Because I've been buying silver.
Yep.
I just wish I had more of it. Okay, well, good.
Yep. Same here, right.
Exactly.
You know, it's like hindsight. Boy, I wish I'd bought all those Bitcoins when that guy offered me 1,000 of them for $50.
Exactly. I look really genius, but I could have been a heck of a lot more of a genius. Okay.
Right.
Well, good. Okay. Well, thank you. Have a great night.
Okay. Thank you much.
And that's it for the Cliff Eye interview. He promised he's going to come back, so I'm excited about that. I have a lot more things I want to dive into with him. But I want to let you know that his contact information is going to be up on my website so that you can get to his website. It's halfpasthuman.com. And you can purchase his reports that aren't that expensive. I think it's $10 or something. So it's really reasonable, $14.99. I can't remember if it's $14.99 or $9.99. He has all of his reports for last year for $99.99, which is a great deal if you want to see everything that he accumulated over the last year. Remember to go to my website at sarahwestall.com, and you can see over 150 articles and other episodes. You can also get the first part of the Cliff High interview, and also you can get to my YouTube channel. make sure that you subscribe to the YouTube channel and make sure you subscribe to the newsletter so that you can be up to date on everything that's going on with my show and with all the articles and guests that we have. It's just absolutely fascinating, some of these people that we have on. Try to always bring you the cutting edge, different way to look at what's going on in the world. You know, when you're bringing on cutting edge stuff and you're bringing on geniuses, you're going to hear things from all different, you know, from left field, from all over. Sometimes it's going to seem silly to you because your paradigm is different. If you take some time and try to see it from their perspective, you know, maybe it'll open your mind to a different way to looking at a problem that you're solving, or maybe it'll come, you'll come up with an innovation. Even if you don't believe in what they're saying, you think it's not real, or you don't just don't believe, that's how innovation occurs, is to get out of your box mentally and to think about things differently. And that's why bringing on all these different people that think differently and look at the world differently can really open your mind and help you with innovation and problems and your business solutions and things. So enough of my ranting. So I hope you all remember to have a beautiful day and a wonderful weekend.